Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, you're listening to Friends with Money. I'm Michelle Baltazar, Editor-in-Chief at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Today's episode is about recession-proof investing. Can we really protect our savings from the ups and downs of the market? Or are there guiding principles that we need to stick with through thick and thin? Joining us today is Money Magazine founder and editorial advisor, Paul Clitheroe. Paul, it's a pleasure to have you back on Friends with Money.
That's always my pleasure, Michelle.
Last year on Valentine's Day, the ASX 200 was sitting on a record high of 8,540 points. And then it went down to 7,300 points after the Trump's tariff announcements. I hit the panic button and I said, I need to talk to Paul and tell me, give me perspective around this. And by the time we're doing this episode, the ASX 200 is back up to 8,100 points. So tell me, what do we tell our readers about this volatility in the markets?
Well, look, it's probably a good time to be doing it, isn't it? I mean, look, with hindsight, I would have rather told you at 7,300 points, which you know I would have done. It's what I've been doing for 40 years now. At 7,300, I would have been saying, look, what we know from history is we know that this global tariff and trade issues is something sort of new. We've always had trade wars going on back into the 1500s, by the way. But the reality is that the only thing I know, backed up by many, many, many hundreds of years of history, the only thing I know is that each time we're in one of these events, our flight fear comes into play, and that we fear that the sky is falling. And we do the Chicken Little thing. We run around in circles, cluck, cluck, clucking. You know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. But interestingly, over the long run, the sky has never fallen. And here we can use probably the worst of all the downturns, the Great Depression of the 1880s. You know, we can go into the Great Depression of the 1929-1930, where markets fell 86%. Now, that would get your little feathers ruffled, Michelle.
Wow.
Yeah, 86%, that's pretty something, right? And by the way, the one nasty piece of evidence in panicking, selling and not doing that, or doing or panicking and selling, is interestingly, it's really only the Great Depression of 29-30, because the falls were so enormous and the global economy was so devastated. It took literally right through to World War II for markets to gain full recovery. So, you know, that's an example. That's an awfully long time to wait to get your money back. Although your dividends still flow, by the way. But so basically, the thing I've always said is that we know the rule. The rule says we sell in the highs, we buy in the lows. Great advice, but none of us have got the first clue where the highs and lows are, despite all the stuff you read in social media and heavens knows where else. It's why Money Magazine doesn't run headlines saying sell everything now, or sell your house and buy shares. Because look, as sensible people, we know it's rubbish. We know we don't know. And so this concept, if you're of a personality where any time a market fell, you're going to start losing sleep and go into sell mode, bluntly, you actually shouldn't own things like shares. An advantage of property is, by the way, usually in these cycles, your property is falling in value just as quickly, but you don't know about it. Properties, Michelle's house is not listed on the share market. And so if Michelle discovered a house had fallen in value $200,000 today or yesterday, Michelle doesn't know. What I find really funny about people is that they go, it's okay, Paul, I'm not worried about my property if you're lucky enough to own a property. I'm not worried about my property falling in value. It's going to recover. And I say, why is it going to recover? And they say, well, but Paul, the population of Australia and the world is growing, and more people means more houses. And I go, spot on. You've nailed the property argument. But why does that argument not work for Woolworths or the Commonwealth Bank or CSL or, BHP or whatever else? Because it really is exactly the same process in our economy. Woolies sells food, for heaven's sake. So if I own Woolies shares, the only thing that's ever going to threaten me and threaten my view on the value of property is if our population shrank due to some crisis. Now, take bubonic plague in the 1340s, 1349. take this. So there we do know for a fact, we've got excellent records in Venice, a bit over half the population died. Mm. That is not good for Woolworths or property. But basically what we do know is we people, us little people running around buying a loaf of bread, as I did this morning, buying a litre of milk, we are 68% of the economy. Just us trotting around doing our thing. And it is one of the reasons why Australia's done okay the last 20-odd years, is I know there are all sorts of views on immigration. I'm an immigrant. I came out from England as a 10-quid pom when I was 8 years old with mum and dad and my sister. So I'm one of those. But funnily enough, in my own little way, I've added to the economy as well. Built a business, employed people, paid tax, bought a loaf of bread. So a great part of the economy is just us pottering around. The reason I call back to common sense about not selling is it makes sense to have common sense. The world population is growing. Australia's population is growing. Demand for housing is growing. We'll come to that later. Demand for loaves of bread is growing. Demand for fruit and vegetables, banking services, insurance, you name it. Demand is growing, right? It's just more people. Pretty simple, really. So basically, when a market falls, I also feel like selling, but every fiber in me knows it's wrong based on history. The history of property goes back 7,000 years. History of shares goes back hundreds. Businesses have been in the economy for 7,000 years. As long as we've been alive, we've either made bread or done something. We are a business-based economy. So it's really important just to sort of you've got to get that little person in you telling you, oh, my God, this is different. This is different. The end of the world is coming. I must sell. And the reason, that's what I would have said to you a few weeks ago at 7,300. And it's kind of nice today. It is back at 8,000 because, you know, this is no great surprise, in particular at the moment. We do have an unusual situation where one person basically is pulling triggers that can impact the market dramatically. But that person pulling those economic levers around tariffs and stuff, he's not halving the population. He's not doubling the population. We've still got fundamental economic growth in the global economy.
It's so comforting to hear all that, because sometimes it feels like we're a nation with a memory of a goldfish about how markets work, right? And now we have JP Morgan saying the chances of a recession has gone up from 30% to 60% to now 90%. So yes, the markets have bounced back, but if there is a global recession around the corner, it's never too late to save. It's never too late to not be wasteful of your money. And certainly you want to stay in the market because it's about time, not timing, in terms of your shares and property. Is that a fair recap of what to do when there is uncertainty still? And as you've rightly pointed out, some people are going through really tough times.
Oh, absolutely. In simply in the economy, the reality is in the biggest boom where, you know, some years you will make 30 or 40% on shares, just the way it is. Some years you'll lose 30%, it's the way it is. Over time, history says you're going to average around that, you know, 10, 11%, including dividends. So basically, that doesn't really do much for people who don't own any shares and don't have any super. The reality is we're always going to have, for a whole bunch of reasons, from family breakdowns, ill health, mental health, cancer, you know, this always going to be, even in the best of biggest of booms, there are always going to be people doing it tough, and it could well be one of us. And your points are right if you've got a bit of a buffer and savings and so on. But these are lovely things to have. And I mentioned already the pressure Vicky and myself were under in 1990 when interest rates hit mortgages 8.75%. Had to sell both cars and so on. But the big thing was that I actually didn't lose my job in that recession. And if I'd lost my job in that recession, because Vic was home with the kids, luckily she could have gone back to teaching because she's on maternity leave. That was a real safety factor for us. If I lost my job, it's another diversification plan, I guess, in a relationship. And so we say, well, if Paul loses his job in that particular time, which is not impossible, unemployment got up towards 9%, then we thought, well, I'll come to at-home dad. And we were luckier than many, that Vicky could go off maternity leave and back into teaching. So, but that's peculiar to us. But, you know, we still had to sell both cars and stuff. Look, it's not particularly pleasant, but I think the younger generation had been through it. We're now talking about those who are not doing it really tough today. But we are going to see, no matter how well we manage the economy, with the amounts of debt we're racking up at federal levels and so on, and everyone's seeing the deficits going forwards, it's always risky for an economy to carry lots of debt. So sooner or later, something we don't predict. And the only thing I can predict is we won't predict what happens. Is the Trump thing something we've never been through before? Yes, it is. We've had trade wars before. We had tariffs this is going on for thousands of years, charging people to bring goods into your country. That's back to borders. But this is unique. But it's no more unique than the failure of Lehman's. It's no more unique than the 1990 dot-com bust. I didn't pick a single one of these. I didn't pick this Trump stuff, even though it was failure. The tariff thing was he spoke about it a lot, but I had no idea if it was bluff or bluster. And I figured it hurt Americans more than anyone else, which is the likely outcome, by the way, and may affect all and will affect all of us if this continues. So one reason or another, we're going to see recessions come and go. But I can't say to you that this Trump stuff is totally unique in the sense it's the US president, but it is not unique. Downturns are not unique. World wars happen. A dot-com bust happens. A banking collapse happens. So stuff happens, and we're incredibly intelligent as we look back at it. But the fundamental thing I keep pointing to is where the demand for property and goods and services comes from is human beings. And this year, the world is going to grow by approximately 93 million people. Now, that's 3 and a bit times the population of Australia are going to be born this year. The world population is exploding. If readers are really interested, go to a thing called Worldometer. And it actually shows you births and deaths by the second. It's quite alarming clock, actually. But it shows you basically that this year, and it's plus or minus, it's pretty much right, 90 plus million new people on the planet. Now, that becomes 1 billion new people on the planet in 10 years. And guess what, Michelle? These people eat. They want to buy a car. They want electricity. They want to be warm in winter. They prefer to be cool in summer. And basically, primary demand driver in the global economy is we little people like you and I running around, I'm repeating myself, running around and buying our loaf of bread and paying our rent, paying off a mortgage, whatever we're doing, buying a car, selling a car, panicking and selling our shares. Please don't do that. The reality is that we are the engine room of economic growth. And 68% of the world's economic just comes from us wandering around the place doing stuff. And so, look, I just can't get to, if we go into a recession, we will recover from recession. And bluntly, and I'm repeating myself again, the recession, you talk about nature's cleansing cycle. If we get, too many predators, well, stuff gets eaten and the predators have got nothing to eat, they die out. Now, it's awful, okay? Nature can be really tough. It can be really, really tough on over numbers of predators, whatever it may be. But the reality is that a recession is a bit of an economic cleansing cycle. As the wonderful Warren Buffett says, which I do adore, the only time you find out when people are swimming naked is when the tide goes out. And, when things boom, we get a lot of stuff going on that really is, you're going to get caught out sooner or later. And as the tide goes out, so what Buffett is saying, the tide going out is like recession. When the recession comes, a lot of poor practices get unearthed. And bluntly, it is one of the economy's cleansing parts of the cycle. Easy for me to say, if I lose my job in that cycle, it's really painful, right? There is pain. If we go into one, we are going to recover because the world population and Australia's population, regardless of this current political debate, is going to grow. Growth in people means growth in demand. So basically, do what you can to hang in there. If you need to, you cancel the Foxtel subscription. If you need to, you sell the car. If you need to, bluntly, I've had a few people, move out of the homes they own, and maybe they're not that keen on living with mum and dad, or maybe they can't. It's like me. My parents lived in the country. Very hard to live with mum and dad. But people are taking some pretty strong action to save those primary assets. So it is really, I think, it is about not panicking and selling your shares in super in a bit of a downturn. You'll always end up regretting that.
Now, you've kind of covered this before, but I was enjoying our conversation that I forgot to ask the obvious, which is the topic of this episode, recession-proof investing. So for a bonus round, can you give our listeners 3 tips on recession-proofing their shares or property portfolio right now?
I think it's really more a broader comment. I mean, the obvious recession-proof strategy is that we do know that cash, for example, it is always, over any 10-year period, the worst performing asset class you'll ever hold. No protection against inflation. You pay tax on your interest. And let's say at the moment, even if you're getting 5% on a term deposit, strip out about 3% inflation. Let's say on your 5%, you're paying, you need to pay 40% tax. There goes 2. So your 5% is 3%. Inflation's about 3. So at best, you're standing still, even with relatively high rates of return on term deposit. And rates, by the way, I support the other experts, rates will go down. And by the way, one of the joys, if you can call it that, of a recession is obviously rates go down strongly during a recession, because that's how the Reserve Bank allows us to helps us to recover again. So, you know, rates are certainly going to drop if things slow down. So basically, the wonderful thing would be is that as you go into a recession, you'd be 100% in cash earning 5%. Recession comes along, both property and share values will tend to fall. And of course, you buy in at the bottom. Stupid strategy. So my feeling is, in terms of being recession-proof, it is actually also where you are in a boom, to be quite blunt, Michelle. And where we are is, I particularly, it's easy at my age. When Vicky and myself had 3 kids, we had absolutely stuff all savings. You know, we were struggling to pay our mortgage each month, let alone savings. So the perfect world doesn't really exist. But obviously, we're now talking about investing. I do not change my asset allocation across cash, shares, and property in booms or busts. So my recession-proof strategy for me is maintaining my diversified portfolio. If I got a bit overexcited during a boom and got a bit too excited and found most of my super in shares, we shouldn't be doing that in a boom or a bust, to be quite blunt. So for me, it's about maintaining a sensible mix of assets. And if you're younger, I would be sticking with my growth strategy. Bluntly, at my age, 70 this year, I'm only working a few days a week, mainly for you, Michelle, and a couple of boards I chair. But basically, for me at the moment, is that I am earning less than we spend. And so for me to have, say, a couple of years of our spending money put aside in either cash and superannuation or outside superannuation makes a lot of sense. Because as my earnings decline, I need to rely on assets. And what I don't want to be doing is I don't want to be forced to sell assets in a downturn. So a recession-proof strategy for a younger person is bluntly to maintain the sort of superannuation so on you should be in, which is really a growth strategy. You've made 30 or 40 years to go. Is it smart to have a little bit of a pot of savings if you can? Look, obviously it's smart if you can. Because what you don't want to be forced to do is the last thing you need is, and that's why Vic and myself, you know, cancel whatever you need to cancel, Foxtel, whatever, get rid of that stuff in a recession. If you're looking at losing your job or whatever, cars may need to go, whatever. But basically, it's maintaining the primary asset if you own a home, and it's doing whatever you need to do to maintain that home. So for me, really, I think in a way, I've probably throughout my life been prepared for recession simply by holding a mix of assets and not punting on one asset with lots of debt.
Well said. Paul, always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. And I look forward to seeing what happens to your superannuation in the era of Donald Trump, Michelle. And who knows, we could well get a really decent downturn. And at some point in the next 30 years, history says we're guaranteed to get another monster downturn. We will recover, and I've got no idea what's going to cause it.
Yes. I think what I got from this, from our conversation is keep calm and carry on.
Yeah, you need that British T-shirt. Thanks, Michelle.
Before we go, if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast or this episode, please share it with your friends and family. Do you have a finance question that you'd like Paul to cover in his Ask Paul column? Drop us a line on podcast@moneymag.com.au. Until next, I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.